People who have the opportunity to be heard are more satisfied with the outcomes, even if those outcomes are against their interest. So even if they lose, the fact that they're heard helps restore people's faith in the system, their respect for other people and the government. And so I think that that's an important factor to consider. And I believe that the auditor's proposal gives Portlanders that voice and that opportunity to be heard. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Mary McWilliams, representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. Debbie Iona, the League's Action Chair, is also here. The League wholeheartedly supports the Ombudsman and Auditor's proposed reforms to the city's administrative appeals processes. The League is an organization that places a high value on a citizen's right to know, transparency, and accountability. We believe the recommended legislative changes are appropriate, and we urge you to adopt them. When the right to appeal a city bureau's decision exists, that right and the steps needed to initiate an appeal should be clearly stated in the bureau's written communication with the public. Multiple inquiries to bureau staff and city council offices should not be necessary for a community member or business owner to understand that they have the right to appeal and how to access the appeal process. The cost of appeals is another issue that the proposal addresses. Currently, the system is based on a cost recovery model. It is possible for a Portland resident or business owner to spend more money to appeal a city decision than the dollar amount in question. The League supports adoption of a nominal fee for all appeals. But as fees can be a complicated issue across bureaus and departments, and while we support adoption of a nominal fee for all appeals, it couldn't hurt to explore other possible fee structures. The nominal fee approach eliminates the need to consider the cost when appealing a city decision and opens the door to individuals and businesses to appeal city decisions regardless of means. Cub's suggestion that the city explore the option of charging different fees for commercial versus residential customers merits your consideration. These adjustments to the city's administrative appeal processes provides an opportunity to enhance services to the people of Portland. As the League has followed closely the city's police oversight system, we have become aware of the potential to improve city services through consideration of community complaints. Similarly, if the appeals process offered by other city bureaus are made more readily available to residents and businesses through both notification and nominal fees, city bureaus will be able to gain a greater awareness of shortcomings in their policies and decision-making processes. Thank you for considering our views on this important issue. The League urges you to support the Ombudsman's and Auditor's proposed changes to the city's appeals processes. Any exploration of different fees for residential versus commercial customers should not delay the adoption of the proposal.
Thank you. Thank you all very much. Okay. Is there another panel, or are we to public testimony? Okay, public testimony then, please. Anyone signed up?
Yes, we have four people left on the list.
Okay.
They are Wendy Fleming, Leo Rhodes, Ibrahim Mubarak, and Paul Van Orden.
Come on up, please. I think there are four seats. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Did Leo leave? He's coming back.
Okay. Go ahead. You can start, and there's a button on the bottom of that microphone there. There you go.
Great. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I wanted to share my experience with the review and appeal process with you.
Could you move the microphone a little closer?
Closer.
And what's your name?
Wendy Fleming. Last November, I learned my home had a party sewer with, of all things, the house behind me. Sounds like someone else did as well. At that time, I was told there was a sewer main with a lateral in front of my house for my use, but that my neighbors to the north were using it. These neighbors also have a sewer lateral in front of their home that's not being used. However, when my contractor went to get a permit, he was told I'd have to pay to build a new lateral. Confused, I called the BES and was told there's no law prohibiting my neighbors from using a lateral in front of someone else's home. And although the city had requested my neighbors provide proof their line was conforming, they refused to cooperate. Since I couldn't prove their line was non-conforming, they would be allowed to remain, and I would be forced to pay to have a new lateral built, something the city charges nearly $6,000 for. I was given no indication I could appeal this decision. Frustrated that it appeared my neighbor's refusal to cooperate with the city may cost me thousands of dollars, I contacted the Ombudsman's office to see if anything could be done. Margie Solinger helped arrange an administrative review that was held earlier this month. At the review, I pointed out city code includes enforcement provisions that could be used if my neighbors refused to comply, and the review committee agreed to look into it. Rather than require my neighbors to provide proof, the BES sent a crew to locate their line. They found that the line did not cross onto my private property, and the final determination letter states that my neighbor's line is conforming. Prior to the review, I wasn't familiar with the distinction between public and private property, and we had no idea where my neighbor's line was located. Afterwards, I realized that my neighbor's line crossed public property in front of my home, and that also meets the definition of a non-conforming sewer. A private sewer located on public or private property that is not on the same property as the structure being served. In other words, there is a law that says you can't use a lateral in front of someone else's home, although the wording is confusing. I think this shows that the review process can be used to gain information, to increase understanding, and to improve the services the city provides if approached with that intention. After all, how can any person or any system improve if they refuse to consider feedback? In my case, less than 24 hours after I brought this information to the attention of the chair of the review committee, I was told the BES would simply adopt the portion of my neighbor's line that was non-conforming, thereby making it conforming. Initially, I'd been told the cost to appeal the decision would be over $1,300. However, on Friday, I was told the BES now considers this a route of service issue, and therefore it can't be appealed at all. Based on my experience, I would ask that in addition to establishing a uniform, transparent, and affordable appeal process, you ensure the code hearings office makes the final determination as to what can be appealed. Thank you.
Thank you.
In your particular matter, you're meeting with Bill Ryan on Friday?
That's right, through your office. Thank you very much.
I just want to make sure that you feel you're being treated fairly. Thank you.
Okay, who's next? Ibrahim?
All right. Okay, please. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive. And what I want to talk about, the equality of things that go on in this country, this state, this city. We all treat people equally per Constitution and per what God say all people are created equal. I mean, if I say all men, I think I was sexist, so I say all people. However, when it comes down to the low-income people, I don't think it's no equality done unless it's with money. And that's the only equality that I see that's done in this community, in this city, and in this state. Low-income to no-income people can't afford the high fee, the non-refundable fee, the fares to do a hearing where they may get a ticket for $250, which they can't afford anyway. But then in order to get a fair hearing, they have to pay anywhere from $1,000 to $1,300. Even if they create an organization like they right, we deal with Right to Survive, we are a poor organization, and we have to pay those high fees in order to get a hearing or fair trade. And if you're saying that you're doing things equal in that financial step, why can't you do things equal to the people living on the streets, so they should have the same rights, not just when it comes to financial capabilities? And that's why I think I agree with everyone that spoke here that this auto proposal is a good proposal, where it should have a sliding scale to a person, to an organization's income, to a person's income, and their social status. Otherwise, you're not treating people equal, unless you're just looking at the financial aspect of that person. And then their job and their employment, they may not be able to afford that. You know, this is an abusive system. And again, when you do pay that, it's non-refundable. So where are they going to get that money to pay that? If they don't, they're being criminalized. And I think that's profiling and targeting on the poor people in this city, in this state, and in this country.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Mr. Van Orden.
How you doing, members of City Council? My name is Paul Van Orden. I'm a resident in North Northeast Portland. I'm a Quaker, and I have worked for 25 years as a career environmental law officer. I speak today as a citizen on my lunch break from work and not in any capacity tied to my role as an employee at the City of Portland. For many years, I've observed a disproportionate approach to enforcement translate into neighbors of limited fiscal capacity feel the brunt of enforcement. This can be contrasted to the example of affluent folks like appointed City Design Commissioner Ben Kaiser, observed violating Title 33, the very code he has been appointed to by the city to uphold. If we can't find a wealthy man like Ben Kaiser and his business associates to an equitable level to bring them into compliance, we should not remove the rights of less affluent citizens to challenge the cases that have been brought against them. As a career environmental law officer, I have experience working in Newark, New Jersey on cases with fines ranging into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Increasing the ability for citizens and corporations to appeal is not something, as a professional in this field, that I see a problem with in my 25-year career. I've won between 95 and 99% of my cases. An ethical, well-prepared, and strong case does not fear appeals that allow reasonable levels of questioning authority. I wish to thank the Ombuds Office for undertaking the effort to fix a small body of some of the inequities that we have in our enforcement systems. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hi. Yeah, my name is Leo Rhodes, and I'm also with the Right to Survive, but also I'd like to talk also represent the minorities and also the low-income people, which I am formerly homeless. So the $1,300 and $1,000 might as well be $1 million to a low-income people, because it is really hard to get that money. And for an appeal, I mean, that's kind of ludicrous to say, okay, I want my rights, and I don't think I've been charged right here, so I want to appeal it. And then all of a sudden you say, okay, well, it's $1,300 or $1,000 on that. Okay, so if you do have that money and if you do that, then where's your rent going to go? Where's your food going to come from? All of that money is going towards this appeal. And, you know, it's really, really hard for individuals that are low income to do this kind of stuff, have this right to appeal with the money. They do have a right. It's the United States. It's in the Constitution of a right to appeal. But to put this monetary status on it is not right. They should have it. I say zero, just like the rest of the United States is, except for the one state. But, you know, if it happens there, it can happen here. You know, and that's what it should be for the low-income people here. So thank you. Thanks for bringing this issue on up, because it's way past due. There are a lot of people out there that do need this process. And then also I like the transparency or the notice. I do know, yeah, that a lot of people, including me, don't have this knowledge. And so once we go through it, yeah, we don't know. There's blocks there and stuff. We learn as we go along. So that's what I would like, is, you know, to have this process where they can find and understand this stuff. So thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Leo, welcome back to City Hall.
Thank you.
Your pay job, you can be found at the Whole Foods on Sandy, and he has a book of poetry forthcoming.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Some questions of the auditor, Mayor?
Yes, please. Come on back.
Well, Madam Auditor, a few questions from what we've heard. I thought whoever testified in favor of the notice of appeal citing to the statute that governed, I thought that was an interesting point. So I looked at Exhibit A, Title III Administration, and 3.130.020B, and it says short plain statement, of the notice. Wait a second. So the, it describes what the notice has to have, and I think this idea of uniform notices of appeal is spot on. As I read it, it doesn't appear to mandate that the bureaus cite to the statute. that applies. Any reason why we shouldn't add that as a sub-E?
No. It was in a prior draft, and it got edited out, so.
And have we heard any feedback from the bureaus where that would be burdensome or I mean, if they can't figure out the statutory basis, what would be your suggestion there? The citation to both the rules that govern appeals and to the substantive statute that governs the basis for the action taken by the bureau? So both?
Right.
Well, I'm going to make that I'm going to offer that as an amendment, and I think it's probably a friendly amendment, but I'm going to offer, let's park that maybe as, mm-hmm. as potential amendments, because I think that goes directly to what you're trying to do around notice mm-hmm. and puts people on notice of where they can find the statute. And if they Google it, I'm assuming they can pick it right up offline or find it somewhere, so it'll make it easier. The $57,000 in your budget request, that's based on what assumption?
That is based on the predictions from the bureaus in the coming year of what they think they're going to generate in code appeals or code enforcement and appeals cases.
Right.
And so it's a projected number based on what we think is going to happen.
Based largely on current rate of appeals or on a projected higher volume?
I'm going to let Sarah Landis answer that question. She's more familiar with the budget request.
I want to make sure it has built in a contingency because I'm not sure what happens if we blow through that amount.
Well, I have another issue to raise that.
Sarah, how did you get the 57 and what happens if our projections are on the conservative end?
Sarah Landis, City Auditor's Office. The projection does not include a contingency. It is strictly based on the number of cases that bureaus with whom we have interagency agreements, the number of cases that they intend, that they thought that we might hear next year. We're trying to do a conservative budget ask without any assumptions that any legislative changes would bring changes in workload.
If after 6 months, this $57,000 was eaten up, would your intention be to bring a further request and a budget modification?
We would need to do so. We do have some flexibility in our budget in the hearings office right now to have an on-call land use hearings officer so that person could pick up some of the workload that Greg currently has with land use hearings and allow him more time to focus on the code hearings. But it's our intention to collect really robust data and to try to suss out whether there are new appeal avenues being utilized as a result of a legislative change, and to track very closely the numbers of cases and where they're coming from.
And that data would come to us at the end of the one-year pilot project as part of a report on what our experience has been and whether you recommend any further changes?
Right. And I think there's also a larger question about the overall funding structure of the hearings office. This is just addressing, you know, the code portion of our budget, but there are financial policies that we are out of compliance with in the way that we're recovering funds for that office.
Judge, what kinds of cases routinely involve a stay of the administrative proceeding pending the hearing?
For the most part, just exclusions.
So in almost every other case, there's no stay. In other words, the money, if there's a fine or a delinquent bill, it still has to be paid even though someone's in an appeal?
There isn't, to my knowledge, there is nothing that addresses that specifically. When the case is in front of me, I do not order, whether it be interim or final or whatever you want to call it, I do not order that the money be paid or not paid. In other words, stay or no stay. That's not something that I do.
What do you think of the idea of, in certain circumstances, giving you the discretion to apply interest to whatever your judgment is?
That's your call, not mine. I have, from my perspective, judges do it.
As
a statutory matter, I have no problems with you giving me that authority.
Madam Auditor, do you have an opinion on interest, including whether if it was within the discretion of the judge, it kicked in, it only applied to a certain class of cases?
I don't have a problem with that, and my preference would be that those kinds of decisions remain with the hearings officer, and I think that those would go a long way in addressing your concerns that people would be gaming the system, and it would, I think, instead of barring them from the door, it would signal to them that if they are going to try to game the system, that there is the potential for a penalty. And I think that gets us around the dragnet effect of trying to do something. You know, you've already provided the appeal to these groups, and so instead of trying to bar the door through some sort of process, that we could leave it in the discretion of the hearings office to be on guard for those kinds of things, and should they appear, that he could at that point take action.
So if we were to craft something that said, in a very rare case, at the sole discretion of the judge, if he or she determines the case is utter, you know, is without merit, or however you want to craft it, the remedy could include interest and potentially a penalty described as X. Do you think we could craft something just for purpose of discussion?
You mean today?
Well, I don't have a...
the other option I would recommend, assuming these are amendments that you would like to add to the package, is because this is a non-emergency ordinance, I'd recommend just continuing it a week and giving you a chance to put these thoughts on paper as amendments and bring the revised ordinance back as a substitute.
See what the council thinks at that point.
Okay. Does that sound like
would you be open to working up, for purposes of our discussion, something that would give the judge the discretion at the back end, if it was a case without merit, to award something, whether it's interest or penalty or whatever you and I work out, in addition to an amendment to Exhibit A?
So is that different than the question you just asked?
I'm just saying, are you amenable to what the mayor suggested, that
yes.
we continue this for a week,
yes, I'm sorry.
And you and I would get together and see if we could agree on some language?
Yes.
And Sarah has said we'd get a report at the end of the year. Is that in the legislation, or is that just that's your intent that you stated on the record?
It's our intent. We are going to have to come with a budget ask next year to fix the funding structure, and at that point we hope to have enough data to let you know whether or not we're staffed at the appropriate level.
One last question. I thought the person who testified for the National Lawyers Guild said something interesting about the value of having your day in court, of having a hearing, and even if you don't prevail. And as a former plaintiff's lawyer with a lot of hopeless cases, that I would say was very valuable. Do we have a mechanism that allows the parties to decide to go to mediation in lieu of the hearing, or some equivalent of mediation where there's a chance to talk more informally about the claim, and which I think we have in our legal experiences have found to be very valuable in giving someone a hearing, but also sometimes choking off cases before you have to put a lot of time and energy into it?
That provision is not in the code at this time. We do not have it in our rules at this time. Once again, if it is what the council desires, that they have an intermediary step, then that's what will follow. If you'll understand, and I had it in my opening comments, but after hearing some of the discussion, I cut it out, but there's a lot of Bureau decisions made every single day that aren't appealable to anybody, whether it be a supervisor, a committee, or the hearings officer. There's just those decisions. There's the other extreme that they go to the hearings officer through some intermediate mechanism. My focus is, when it comes to me, is I perceive that as a contested case, and we simply have the hearing because we are, under the code, required to hold the hearing within 30 days. If you tell me that there is a possibility of sending people, giving them an option to go to mediation,
we're going to, in the time frame we're operating under, going to get there. But since your proceeding results in a winner and a loser,
it does.
I would like us, Mayor, to consider whether there's a mediation type option in certain cases that we could craft that actually makes the person bringing the claim the master of his or her claim. It gives them a chance to do justice without going through a hearing.
I like that.
Certain kinds of cases,
especially since we have that function inside the walls of city government already. In the ONI office. So.
But I think it's going to be hard to craft quickly, but I would hope it's something we could take a look at and see. Maybe Dante had an experience in Denver.
listening to the question, there were times, certainly in lower level issues, when pro se petitioner was there, that I would, because I had the authority of the director, essentially. It wasn't necessarily statutory. And so there were times when I would literally stop the hearing and say, we're going to take a recess, and you, the representative from the agency and the petitioner, I'm going to send you outside, and you're going to come to a better conclusion than you would much prefer than if I make a decision. And more often than not, they would come back, and they would have reached some reconciliation. And so there were times I just said, we're going to stop, because clearly you two have not communicated before. And so I'm going to send you out so you can do that, and then come back and tell me where you are, and we start again or not.
Frankly, where I would find that compelling is if you stopped the proceeding, called someone from one of my utilities, you know, took them aside and said, based on what I've heard, work this out.
Well, that's who was representing the agency,
yeah.
Somebody from the Bureau.
And, yeah. and come back and tell me whether you can or not, but
right.
It would be in your interest to work this out.
And that's exactly how I said it.
Commissioner, that occurs in code cases, and it's always a distinction, but code cases are brought by the city. Appeal cases, which we're talking about here, are not. They're brought by the citizen or the entity. That technique is simply a judicial technique that if you perceive that there's an opening for an agreement, then it makes entirely good sense. It takes time, and I only use it personally when I think I can be productive.
Well, because I think the spirit of these things always ought to be to do justice. I mean, we have rules and we have guidelines and we have time limits, but at the end of the day, if a citizen comes in on a claim, our theory should be to do justice.
Mr. Burkholder's case is a case and example. Is that is
a guy
case
that gamed the system and is still here complaining?
Yeah, he's still trying to game the system.
Fee. I think it's outrageous.
Mr. Burkholder was incredibly respectful. He was incredibly professional. He came to me. He heard something that he didn't want to hear, and I remanded it back to one of your bureaus. And from what I understood, sort of secondhand, is that he accepted the process because we sent him back, and in essence, not in my room, but in another room, they came to an agreement. That one I actually sent back. I have within my powers right now to remand, and a remand is a very forceful, in essence, position saying, go back and fix it because it's got to be fixed. Usually that occurs when I perceive the Bureau has had some technical issue along the way and they need to go back and fix it.
Thank you.
Well, then I'd like to suggest, if given this discussion, that we do continue this, give you or anyone else in the council a chance that wants to suggest some further amendments to do so.
So might I have an opportunity to testify?
You mean to speak? Yes.
I haven't said anything yet.
You may, but I'm also going to pass the gavel to Commissioner Novick because I have to leave. But I will do that and let you continue the discussion. And again, the presiding officer of the council at that point can continue this until next week. But that sounds like what I would like to do as well.
It's an issue that I think you'll be interested in.
All right, I can stay for another couple of minutes before Zach grabs me by the scruff of the neck. Go ahead.
Well, the council did have a discussion about demolition delays.
Yes.
And part of the outcome of that was that we were going to have this appeal to the code hearings office to allow the 60-day demo delay.
Right.
So that's a very different kind of appeal from the my fine is too much, my bill is too high. It's a I don't like this development action in my neighborhood demolition. And we had estimated that just for that one process, it was going to be $92,000 that we would be needing to pay the code hearings officer. So there's two issues there. One, because that was 20% of the expected demo delays that we expected to get appealed. So there's the question of the amount of money that's being requested. There's also the question of doing away with the fee, which I actually support completely doing away with the fee. A $5 or $25 or $50, if it's nominal to one person, if you're on an $800 Social Security check, it's $5 is still out of the realm of possibility. So I would support going to no fee, but then that removes the safeguard that we put in place for demolitions, that the fee waiver was for neighborhood associations who go through a process rather than for Joe or Jane homeowner next door who's just ticked with the developer and wants to delay them for another 30 days.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now that does have to be considered. Thank you. Okay, good. Well, thank you. I just want to comment before I leave. I have to race off to something else. I'm really glad you brought this forward. This is the right thing to do. Obviously, there's some more work to do to shape it. I can't help but be struck by what may seem an anomalous comparison, but I don't think it is. In the wake of the Ferguson tragedy, there's been some attention to the fact that not just Ferguson, although they were most pointed out for it, but a whole bunch of little municipalities that are too small to actually be municipalities there survive financially by charging people court fines for damn near everything they can think of. And what a contrast with what you're proposing here to make the system much more just for everyone rather than distorting the relationship between the government and its citizens with prohibitive charges or in some cases confiscatory ones. So I just think this is really a very Portland thing to do, and I really appreciate you bringing it forward.
Mayor, one question for you, since you're the maker of the budget, and you've expressed your support for the concept, is your preference to have a placeholder number that's based on some reasonable guesstimate or to inflate it to cover some reasonable contingency so there's one budget ask for this season?
I think given that we have a contingency budget, and we will have one in my proposed budget, and I suspect we'll have one of some amount when we get done, I'd rather have you make your best guesstimate at what you think this will be, but with an understanding that this is a guesstimate, not the kind of forecast that we have typically in bureaus, and then have a council understanding that there will be a contingency ask if we turn out to be low in that number.
Okay, because we learned about the $92,000 figure recently before we made our budget ask, and
so that was... Well, we'll talk about what that number should be.
Okay.
Might get carved out altogether, it sounds to me. It sounds like it might be a whole
That's
different
possibility, yeah.
Animal.
So I know that the mayor has to go. I would appreciate some discussion of the, I think, important issue I've raised.
I'd be happy to do that.
Madam Auditor, what do you think the appropriate response would be?
The appropriate response to the $92,000
yeah.
issue?
No, the issue is partly the $92,000 because obviously you can just ask for more.
Right.
But the issue is, in that particular instance, is there a public purpose in dissuading Joe Citizen, Jane Citizen from appealing a demolition permit?
You know, that when we discussed this yesterday, it was the first that had been brought to my attention, so I have not considered that is a little bit different kind of issue than an appeal of an action that's been taken against somebody who can come to the hearings office. So I would ask Greg if he had any sort of initial impression, because I haven't reviewed that information since you brought it to my attention yesterday, and so I don't, as I sit here, have an answer for you.
Commissioner Fritz, I think you've raised a great point. Is it something that can be reconciled with this proposal, or is it something that gets carved out altogether because it's so different?
I don't have a particular answer to my question. I just think I'm raising it because it's an issue that is different, and I'd like some discussion about the merits of potentially seriously aggrieved Joe homeowner who's a low-income person who can't afford $1,300 versus some of our neighbors in Eastmoreland who are funding a zone change request to get rid of demolitions in their neighborhood.
Do you want to have that discussion now or as part of the conversations that we'll be having with the auditor as this matter gets continued for a week?
Well, given that two of our colleagues aren't able to be here, and I think it really is a policy question for the council to grapple with, I would like to hear Mr. Frank's feedback on that, because I know you have done land use hearings as well as code hearings.
Can I ask you a question? And that is the demolition, and I've met with Crystal Cowan and Douglas Hardy and a couple other folks on this and reviewed a very early draft from my perspective, not to say what I would or wouldn't do in a particular case, but these are the kind of issues that I have with the language that it's going to make it harder for me to make a decision. So from that perspective, I have reviewed an early version of the code. There was a discussion about the fees and the fee waivers, and my perspective on that was that we are really pretty good at making decisions, but we're not very good at making money decisions, in other words, handling money. And so my request to those folks at BDS was, please, whatever you do with the money other than the fee waiver, please deal with that on the first floor. With the fee waiver, I said, the more criteria you can give me, whether or not you're going to use the court models or whatever, the happier I would be. So that's how I responded. But my question was, this is a Title 33 issue, isn't it?
No, it's Title 24.
24. All right. So it would fall within, okay.
And the way we ended up with the code language which we should have adopted was just the fee waiver for neighborhood associations. I don't think there's a reference to a fee waiver for low income or anybody else.
My position is kind of the same then as I'm not, I would prefer access to justice to be access to justice. And that means that the lower or zero fees, appellate fees, would be in existence. I certainly understand, because I heard a number of the comments from the BDS folks, that they are really concerned with frivolous appeals. I mean, they truly are concerned with frivolous fee appeals simply to slow down the process. And I can understand that.
Because it does stop the process for a demo delay.
It does.
Also, in my case, it has the effect, some of those cases with lots of lawyers, lots of money, and some rather finely tuned arguments do have the effect of consuming a lot of the resources the city's making available. So in a way, the average person is subsidizing the big company that's consuming a lot of your office time on a case.
Can I just add, if I understand what you're raising, council via code decides who has standing to appeal. So you define who is an interested party, who can be an appellant. So if you're concerned that this broader group of folks are going to be able to access the process, I think a possible remedy to that would be to narrow the scope of the appeal right, not necessarily having to raise the fees for certain groups of people.
I would think if we went back to do that, we would always give an appeal right to the person living next door. I mean, the way we managed that and we came to a decision was that the person next door has to go to the neighborhood association, and there has to be a plan for how we're going to move the house or save the house or buy the house in order to be able to go and ask for the 60-day delay. But I appreciate the thought. It's just that I think anybody should have the person living next door. Either we change it so that it's only neighborhood associations that can appeal. But that doesn't seem fair either.
Are there some neighborhoods that don't have an association?
Everybody has a neighborhood.
Everybody has this, okay.
But I think there are some that aren't necessarily representative of the folks who live in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Right. On the other hand, it's generally the more affluent homeowners,
exactly,
who are in the neighborhood association,
right,
who are more concerned about the demolitions. Not exclusively. We had a lot of testimony from renters who are being displaced, mm-hmm, at the hearings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think that, in general, neighborhood associations are on it. But that then there are other individuals. So it's a question that I think we should be thinking about as we're considering when to bring this back and what the rules should be for that, whether it's excluded or all in, wait and see what happens. But we were quite nervous even about the 20% of appeals from neighborhood associations costing $92,000.
Commissioner, do you think perhaps we should take more than a week to bring this back? It sounds like there's a few issues that we haven't all thought through, and maybe if we're going to come back, we should give people some time to have some discussions and to come up with amendments, et cetera.
And there was one other issue, which is we're all tied up on Friday, so we have one last day to talk to you.
The challenge, though, is that we really need all five of us together to make this policy decision, and we're not allowed to talk about policy at our retreat on Friday. So I was really hoping that we would have all five of us to have a robust discussion today after I had briefed the auditor yesterday.
Here's what we could do. Right, the way it's established now, we're continuing it for a week. so we can have conversations with the auditor and her team about possible amendments. You've identified an issue that I think needs to be explored, and there's a number of ways to do it. It could be around standing, it can be a carve-out. I'm having trouble getting my arms around how to resolve it, but that's because I think I'm having Uber fatigue.
Yes, and there's that too.
We were here late last night. But the additional week would give us a chance to do that, and then when we come back next week, we can have the policy discussion that around each of the amendments, and then to see whether we're ready to proceed to vote. Does that make sense?
I won't be here next week, but
that's right.
I don't know if that's how
you're
big
not
a deal
here in
that
the morning
is.
And the afternoon.
Right, I'm not getting back till D.C. until Thursday night.
Commissioner Fish, you're gone in the morning,
and
Commissioner Fritz,
afternoon.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, do you mind if we continue this 2 weeks, Madam Auditor?
Actually, I am going to be gone the following week, so it would have to be 3 weeks.
3 weeks?
Is that, are you okay with that?
I would be okay with that.
There is a sense of urgency, but if you wouldn't mind, then it gives us a chance to get it right.
In 3 weeks, you're gone, Commissioner Fish.
Oh.
Cancel my daughter's graduation. I'm gone the Wednesday and Thursday?
You're gone Wednesday morning, I believe the Wednesday afternoon. That's May 13th.
But Thursday?
You're gone Thursday, the 14th.
Well.
All right, Carla, what's the next date you can give us?
Let's see. If you want to do a, looks like everybody's in on the 20th, May 20th, Wednesday.
And I think in terms of the budget, what I've heard today is very much agreement that we'd like to do this. I commend Ombudsman Salinger and Auditor Caballero. It's astonishing that within 4 months of your arriving here, you've been able to work with the Ombudsman and bring this to us, and it's exciting as one of your first major policy initiatives. So I don't think there's going to be a problem, at least from my perspective, with approving at least $56,000 as a pilot, as a number of one time, and it's just one time money for this to see how it goes. So in terms of getting whatever we choose adopted, is there a target date for implementation? Would it be July 1st?
Or this proposal, this would be September 1st, and then the budget would be July the 1st.
Okay, so we have the time. In fact, your predecessor used to come before us regularly and complain that we were cutting her budget, so I think you've now set a precedent of getting additional money for your budget. So
she was in some cut
years. Let's not get in the habit of this.
Yeah, she presided in cut years.
Well, I think the mayor... It's very interesting. The mayor has kept his cards close on all of his funding things, but I think he essentially said he's going to fund this. So, if you're looking at September 1st, you said,
for the legislative, this would go into effect.
Yeah.
On September 1st.
So are we okay with the 20th?
And is there a time certain, Carla?
It would be 2:00. Yeah, is there a reason the 13th afternoon didn't work? I show everybody in that afternoon, and that's after your IPR code changes, Auditor.
I think it's better to go one more out.
Okay.
Commissioner Fritz will be preparing for the benefit that's honoring her that later afternoon.
He knows more about my schedule than I do.
I'm the MC, so I have to get my beauty rest too.
So 2:00 on the
20th? Yes, there is a 6:30 budget committee, but I think she'd be okay with this one item on in the afternoon at 2:00.
Well, let's
on May 20th.
Be sure to request an hour so that we have plenty of time to discuss.
Okay.
At least. Thank you very much.
Thank you for a very thoughtful conversation, and to all the people testified.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I really appreciate your bringing this issue forward. And I think that we're all agreed that we need to achieve the goal of improving access to justice. We just got some kinks to work out.
Thank you.
This matter is continued until the 20th, and
yes,
we are adjourned.
Thank you.